The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. You hear it live back inside the Beltway on May 10th in the year of our Lord 2022. I am Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for listening this morning. I'm broken. I'm a broken man, but I'm recovering. I spent, as those of you listened to Friday, I drove down to my daughter's house. My son-in-law has been dispatched somewhere by the Navy, and it was Mother's Day, and I thought I would fill in. The Fetching Mrs. Hewitt is about to descend there for a couple of weeks when baby number four arrives. But so my very pregnant daughter and her three wonderful children, the Scholar, the Artful Dodger, and Genghis Kate, I thought I would help out. And I'm a broken man. Genghis Kate, first of all, I tried to explain to the three-year-old that private property undergirds all of Western civilization. That's Kate, is basically what she says about everything. That's Kate's this, that's Kate's that. But I ended up, because it rained like Noah for Saturday evening and Sunday, so we never left the house. Thank God for DoorDash, right? And Mother's Day was not really Mother's Day. You know, plan a nice outing and you end up eating Shake Shack that's delivered to the door because you can't get out of the door. But Kate had a runny nose that could have put out every forest fire in America. And so most of the time we just sat there and read Elmo and Cookie Monster. I can actually recite those from memory now. They're scalded in there. But to a three-year-old, everything is new. So the Scholar was busy running for fourth grade office, which required speeches and posters. The Artful Dodger was just around being mischievous, though he got two hits and four at-bats and made a stunning play at first base, if I may say so myself. Got to see that before the rains came. So I'm a broken man. I'm so glad to be back doing the news this morning. Let's get to it. Love those grandchildren. Love waving goodbye to those grandchildren. Love arriving, and I love leaving, and in between, I love reading Elmo 30 times. Global stocks, according to the Financial Times, suffered their worst day since June 2020 amid slowdown fears. Stocks slide the lowest in 2020 as rout continues, says the Wall Street Journal. All right. Fed warns sharp rise in interest rates pose risk to U.S. economy. Bitcoin falls 55% from its high, according to the Wall Street Journal. What's this all mean? Well, it means exactly what I told you 2 months ago. We are headed for stagflation. With inflation and a recession at the same time, it's a replay of the Carter presidency. It's a replay of the aftermath of the Carter presidency, all kind of compressed. I think the rebound from the Carter presidency into the next Republican president will be very, very quick. Come 2025, but we're stuck because Joe Biden's reflect, let's spend more money. That will not work. In fact, you got to drain the money out of the system. There is no scientific way to do this. You have to use a bludgeon. You have to use a hammer on interest rates to drive out inflation. And that means your credit card, pay off your debt if you can, buy your house now because the 30-year fix is going to go up, up, and up. Meanwhile, there is continuing electricity shortage warnage growing across the United States. Power grid operators caution the electricity supplies aren't keeping up with demand. What a surprise. What do you know? In California. Hey, Dwayne, are the lights on there? Just checking to the studio.
Well, for now.
Okay. It's California. We're never sure. It's Gavin Newsom in California, but apparently solar power isn't reliable. How about that? Isn't that amazing? Solar power just doesn't do the job.
Who'd have thunk it?
Who'd have thought that? Sometimes it's cloudy. And the tidal power, that's great if you're right next to the ocean. Low-wage earners to get high-speed internet for $30 each per month in Biden program. Buying more votes as November looms and the Democrats are going to get crushed because this is a disaster. Inflation, recession, and the unemployed who won't come back to work because they're used to the dole. Low wage earners to get high speed. Now, some, by the way, Some people won't go back because they still have uncertainty about their schools introduced by recent experience over 2 years. And they don't want to go back to work only to have to scramble to find childcare that isn't there. I heard a lot about this at the Little League. You learn more about a country at a Little League game because these are engaged parents. This is where all of the national news should go. What's going on in the country? Go to the Little League. Now, first of all, Hewitt's rule, T-ball should be illegal. That's at the top of the next presidential debate that I moderate. What is your position on making T-ball illegal? Now, I like Little League. I like machine pitch Little League. That's what the Artful Dodger is playing. That's actually baseball. T-ball is torture for parents. But if you go to a field where there's, you know, mid-league, fifth to sixth graders, and Little League, second and third graders, not only do you see the world's most engaged parents, not only do you see the diversity of America, you also talk to parents about everything, right? And we know that people are now worried about travel team costs, and they're now worried about baseballs that go over the fence and they run for them. They worry about everything because there isn't any extra money because of inflation. So here is low-wage earners to get high-speed internet for $30 a month. Okay, where did that come from? I thought, where do they get the money? You just can't, you know, wave them at. They took it out of the infrastructure bill. Now, if anyone out there thought subsidies for poor people, which may or may not be a good thing, all right, I'm not debating whether or not poor people need the internet. They do. But if you thought subsidies for people making under twice the poverty level, which is about, I think, $60,000 a year, maybe it's $70,000 a year. So if you make less than $70,000 a year, you get internet for $30 a month. If you thought that was infrastructure, raise your hand. I kind of thought infrastructure with bridges and roads and ports, right? I just sort of thought that because I'm just from Ohio, and infrastructure in there means replace those bridges, which are going to fall down. And that's what we thought it was. But to Joe Biden, it meant the ability to write checks to everyone who doesn't have internet or wants to lower their internet costs and turn out to vote. I think those checks will come with. Don't forget to vote in November. More coming up after the break, America. Don't go anywhere. I got a lot of audio. I've been up all night working on the audio. Don't go anywhere. Thanks to Ed Morrissey, by the way. And the effortless Ed, we call him, was in yesterday because he makes it look effortless. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, David M. Drucker. You see him on TV. You read him in the Washington Examiner. He is on with me every week. Good morning, David. How are you?
I'm great, Hugh. Good morning.
I rarely endorse in Senate races. I didn't in Ohio. I knew everyone. I will eventually in Missouri because Eric Greitens simply cannot be allowed to win. He will lose that seat. And he's a bad guy, in my opinion. But in Pennsylvania, I've held back. But now, Mike Pompeo, Ted Cruz, I actually made up my mind after Secretary Pompeo endorsed David McCormick. I'm endorsing David McCormick on the off chance that there's a listener somewhere that would vote based upon my recommendation. David McCormick ought to be it. But that race is whisper thin. I mean, and there are three people, Kathy Barnett, Dr. Oz, and David McCormick. What do you see happening in Pennsylvania?
Well, this is going to be a fascinating race. It's the first time I've seen from a Republican grassroots and from an establishment level a sort of rejection of a Trump endorsement outright in Pennsylvania. Now, it's close, which means it hasn't been a wholesale rejection among the voters. And there are and Dr. Oz, Mehmet Oz does have some level of grassroots support and establishment support in Pennsylvania. But after Trump made the endorsement, if you talked to activists in Pennsylvania, you talked to some levels of the establishment and a lot of Trump supporters, they were kind of mystified and unhappy about the whole thing and just vowed not to go along with it.
All right,
so
David, here,
to see if
here's my assessment.
Metastasized.
I've said this privately. I'll say it publicly now. I haven't seen anyone else say it. Dr. Oz is former President Trump's Harriet Myers.
Well, maybe not. I don't know that.
Swing and a miss, David. Swing and a miss.
Yes, but I think the reason I don't like the analogy, Hugh, is because Harriet Myers caused President Bush at the time a whole lot of problems. And he was forced to pull her back and replace her, appoint a new nominee, come up with
Justice
a new
nominee, Alito,
because it was impacting his own relationship with the grassroots and with voters. I have not seen, and Trump is on track potentially to lose the Pennsylvania Senate race in terms of his endorsement, lose the Georgia governor's race in terms of his endorsement, and possibly this evening lose the Nebraska governor's race with his endorsement, in terms of his endorsed candidate losing.
But he won Ohio.
But my point is, in these states where his endorsed candidate is about to be rejected and there's been some annoyance, I have not seen a one-to-one correlation with that means that they have a problem with him. A lot of what we are seeing here is, I just don't like the endorsement, but I still like him.
And well, that, by the way, I was a big Harriet Meyer supporter, you know, because I think I was thinking politically, if this is withdrawn, Bush will be injured. And that was the horrible year, 2005. He lost Social Security. Iraq went bad. It was the young lady in Florida was dying and they called the Congress back. I mean, everything that could go wrong went wrong in 2005. And it ended by nominating and withdrawing Harriet Meyer. And I liked counsel to the president Myers. I thought she'd be a fine Supreme Court justice. But the base rebelled. That's my point, is that the base was not persuaded.
Yes, correct. But I always like to point out, because I've been studying this, that the base is rebelling against his decision or decisions, let's say, if we look at multiple races here. And I think it will impact how other elected Republicans relate to Trump. I think he loses some of these big endorsements, and at the very least, there are going to be a lot of elected Republicans that often walk on eggshells around him that are going to be more bold in how they deal with him, their willingness to oppose him when they want to oppose him.
Do you think he might be more cautious?
Still solid.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Donald Trump is still the odds-on favorite to be the nominee of the Republican Party if he runs. However, the more that you endorse and don't win, the likelier it is that the field will be more than Larry Hogan and Chris Christie.
And that's what I'm getting at, and you took the words right out of my mouth. Things like this embolden other Republicans who begin to believe, I can oppose Donald Trump, maybe win, but definitely not be shunned by Republican voters in the grassroots. The fear of Trump, as you know, but not everybody seems to know, has always been about his relationship with voters, not about him. And when I have to answer questions to people that say, why are they so scared of Trump? I said, they're not scared of Trump. They're scared of their own voters. They don't want to be out of line with their own voters.
May I suggest a different word? Not scared. They're respectful of their base.
They're respectful. They're also scared.
We disagree. So, David, you got a prediction in Pennsylvania. Am I going to move one or two voters, and is McCormick going to win?
I think you'll maybe pick up one or two fans. You'll go, oh, look, he agrees with me on this, so he's not so bad after all. Look,
there you go. That's how radio actually works. Never overestimate, unless you're Rush Limbaugh, the late, great Rush Limbaugh, you don't actually move the needle, friends. You don't. To the world of broadcast.
I'll get these emails going, you're not so dumb after all.
David M. Drucker on Twitter. Thank you, my friend. Go nowhere, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Kennedy Hewitt. I want to thank Ed Morrissey for sitting in for me yesterday. Over the weekend, the head of Russia's space agency threatened Elon Musk. Now, I don't know Elon Musk. I don't own any Tesla stock, as far as I know. It might be in a mutual fund. But I'll tell you what. He's an American who's been threatened by the Russians. So I asked National Security Advisor Robert C. O'Brien to join me this morning to talk about that and big tech generally. Good morning, Ambassador O'Brien. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh. Great to be with you.
First of all, do you work for Elon Musk? I know you consult for a bunch of big companies. Is Tesla one of them or SpaceX?
No, we don't work for Elon, but Elon, feel free to call us. We'd love to help you.
Well, first of all, tell me, what did you think of a Russian official threatening an American citizen?
Well, this is a very serious issue, especially in light of the fact that Russia has a history of assassinating its opponents. And so the FBI is almost certainly consulted with Elon. There's a duty to warn that the FBI has for American citizens who have been threatened by foreign governments. And unfortunately, you know, it happens more and more with China, Iran, now Russia getting into this game of threatening Americans. So Elon, I'm sure, has great security. He can certainly afford it. But the U.S., because of Elon's role in the Ukraine crisis and the great work that his companies have done, really ought to be thinking about supplementing his security, at least giving them daily intelligence feeds and potentially giving him government security to work with his private folks. I mean, this is a very serious threat.
Very serious threat. And it also underscores that what Elon Musk did was significant. I mean, he may be nominated for a Nobel Prize next year because I think he helped save Ukraine. What do you think of my assessment there?
Well, he should be, because Ukraine is winning the information war in this war. And the reason it's winning is because of the United States of America and specifically U.S. private sector tech companies. And there are two big reasons, Hugh. First is Musk and Starlink. What he did was unprecedented. As you know, in the early days, the early day or two of the war, Russia tried to use its technical capabilities to take Ukraine off the internet and to prevent Zelensky, President Zelensky, and the Ukrainians from communicating with the outside world. Elon Musk stepped in an unprecedented fashion for a private company, repositioned Starlink satellites, and then sent within 24 hours of the invasion uplink terminals so that Ukraine and President Zelensky would remain connected to the internet. I don't think there's a similar example of a private sector company outside of a Marvel movie with a character doing that in real life. It's amazing what he did.
And you know, he is the Tony Stark of the private sector, and a Medal of Freedom would be at least a Medal of Freedom, because he really did. That matters. Technology matters so much in this war, correct?
Oh, 100%. Imagine this war if Ukraine was not connected to the outside world via the internet. And the second shout out I'll give, and I've been very critical of U.S. social media companies on your show and others, as you know, Hugh, over the years, but it's U.S. social media platforms that then allowed Zelensky to use that internet link up with Starlink to get the message out, to show the war crimes, the targeting of civilians, the resilience of the Ukrainian people. And it's, you know, the Facebook and Google and Twitter, which Elon may own soon, and all these other social media platforms that got the message out to the whole world. And it did two things. Number one, it galvanized the West and it galvanized Europe. But number two, there were a lot of countries that were either neutral or sympathetic to Putin and Russia that may not have put this information out, but they couldn't avoid it because their people were watching what was happening on social media. So between Elon providing the internet access and the Ukrainians taking advantage of social media platforms that have worldwide reach, Ukraine has won this information war. It's really astounding. So, you know, a lesson here is we need to be careful about what we do with big tech, notwithstanding our legitimate concerns, because, you know, breaking up big tech would have left the People's Republic of China and their massive internet companies, TikTok and others, which have been very helpful to the Russians and censored for the Russians. That would have allowed them to control the worldwide global information space. And can you imagine how different Ukraine would look if you were watching the war on TikTok as opposed to American social media platforms?
This is in stark relief, and therefore I wanted to talk about it with you. I am a huge critic of big tech because of the censorship that they have practiced domestically. On the other hand, I've also said, don't run off and bring a Sherman Antitrust Act against it. That's a blunt instrument. That is not a regulatory approach to the problems that ail big tech. Number one, the private sector is acting. You know, Elon Musk is itself the private sector working to correct Twitter's errors. But I am curious, do you think that the old antitrust laws ought to be force fit, you know, square peg and round holes or vice versa to address big tech? I think we need new legislation and new rules.
So I agree with you, Hugh, and I wrote about this in the Wall Street Journal back in December, and it got a lot of attention. You know, breaking up big tech with antitrust tools is a very blunt instrument. And number one, it would be terrible for the information space. But number two, these companies have scale. And the only way we can stay in competition with the Chinese, and the Chinese Communist Party is pumping hundreds of billions of dollars every year into their AI, quantum computing, machine learning, all these technologies of the future. The U.S. still has an edge, and that's why I'm confident that the U.S. is going to prevail in big power competition. But the edge doesn't come from the government. It doesn't come from government research programs or government bureaucracies. The edge comes from these large U.S. private sector companies that have the scale to do the research and the innovation that keep us in the game. And think about SpaceX, another Elon Musk situation. If it wasn't for SpaceX, we'd still be reliant on the Russians to get American astronauts down from the space station during this war. Can you imagine the leverage they'd have on us? We don't have that problem because Elon Musk, you know, cut through the bureaucracy of the big defense contractors and NASA and developed a way to get us to space. Jeff Bezos is doing the same thing, and there are other U.S. companies that are doing. We've got a renaissance in space because of the private sector. So we've got to be very careful about using the blunt instruments of antitrust with Republican conservatives joining up with, you know, Amy Klobuchar and Chuck Schumer to destroy American businesses. We need to regulate those businesses. There's no question about it. The censorship and the bias in big tech against conservatives, you know, has to be fixed. It's a real concern. It's not a fake concern. It's a real concern. But we've got to be careful how we do it so we don't destroy these great national treasures and assets of this country.
Now, I have come to this position after sitting down for dinner a couple of times with Mark Zuckerberg and talking to him on this show. And the dinner with Zuckerberg had not been one-on-one, so I don't want to give that impression. However, you know, among the people that were there, Ross Douthat, the first question as we went around the table, I said, are you a patriot? And Zuckerberg said, looked at me stunned. Of course we are. I'm a patriot. And he ran through all the programs he was running with DARPA, Facebook, Meta now, was running with DARPA. And from that point forward, I've begun to think that what we need is a highly specific set of regs to assure content neutrality, but not to cripple. And you say we need scale. Would you explain scale for the Steelers fans out there?
Coming from a Browns fan,
I know scale.
I'm from LA and a Rams fan. I think we got the trophy this year.
But
look, we have to have companies that can spend billions of dollars a year on esoteric research, on basic research into artificial intelligence and quantum computing and machine learning and all the other areas of tech, because the U.S. government just doesn't spend the kind of money. We're not a command economy. We spend some of the money through DARPA, but even the money we spend through DARPA gets funneled, and that's an advanced research program of the Pentagon. That money still gets funneled through private sector firms. So without a robust private sector, without a private sector with companies that can literally spend tens and twenties and hundreds of billions of dollars researching these, we're going to get left in the dust by the Chinese. There's no government equivalent to what our private sector companies are doing. So if we break up those companies, we're handing the tech high ground to China, to ByteDance and TikTok and Huawei and all these instrumentalities of the Chinese Communist Party. And guess what? They're going to, you know, if you think shadow banning and some of the activities of Twitter were bad, and they were, can you imagine what it's going to be like when tech is controlled and all your social media platforms are controlled from Beijing and not from Silicon Valley?
Last question. We got about a minute, Ambassador O'Brien. Why is Silicon Valley, you're California, why are they so tone deaf? I mean, Mark is the only guy who has reached out to actually hear, I don't know how much it made it through, but to talk to serious conservatives about these issues. Silicon Valley's in a deep blue bubble. It is tone deaf.
Well, it's in California, and it's a bubble in California. And, you know, it's fed by, you know, my former university, my law school, Berkeley, and your school, Harvard, and Stanford, and the elites control these places. And so folks come into those companies with a bias already. But I think you're starting to see a revolt even in Silicon Valley. You've got folks like Peter Thiel and Blake Masters, who's running for Senate now in Arizona as a conservative. You've got Elon Musk, who's a libertarian. So I think you're starting to see a diversity of opinion. And I also think with some of these companies, the backlash, whether it's Disney in Florida or the stock prices, I think they're realizing they can't cut out half the country.
Robert C. O'Brien, Ambassador O'Brien, thank you. And thank you, Elon Musk, for what you've done. And I hope that the federal government is adding to his own private security the vast resources of our eyes and ears around the world, because he saved Ukraine. I mean, Elon Musk saved Ukraine in the first weeks of this war, and Americans ought to know that. Thank you, Ambassador O'Brien, former National Security Advisor to President Trump. I'll be right back. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Yesterday, President Biden signed the Ukraine Lend-Lease Act into law. That's a very good thing. But I read the Washington Post account today, and it did not note that Senator John Cornyn of Texas is the fella who came up with the idea back in January. We discussed it on air on January 13th. I'd been tipped by Roger Wicker of Mississippi that John Cornyn was out talking about reviving Lend-Lease, and it happened. But John Cornyn is a workhorse, not a show horse. So the senator from Texas is not out taking bows, and you should be, Senator. I welcome him this morning. And he didn't know I was going to begin that way, but welcome and congratulations, Senator.
Well, thanks. You know, there actually is a lot of good work being done around here. You just, a lot of it doesn't get noticed because it's not really a clickbait or something that the late night cable shows follow. But it's good progress. And I think in helping the Ukrainians defend themselves, it's a great indication that of our staying power and of our will to support the Ukrainians. It was particularly gratifying to see President Zelensky tweet his appreciation for the Lend-Lease bill that was signed by the president.
Now, tell us, Senator, you're being modest again. Just give us how, you know, there's that famous YouTube video, how a bill, you know, I'm just a bill. how did this happen?
Schoolhouse Rock is what
yes,
you're talking about.
Yes.
So, well, the way it happens is you come up with an idea. And here, of course, as you know, there was historical precedent in March of 1941 when the United States was not involved in World War II. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the original Lend-Lease bill to help Britain and our allies in Europe who were hanging on by a thread against Nazi aggression. And so from that idea, I thought, well, you know, it's fine to be able to provide the Ukrainians the weapons that they need. I just wish it had happened faster. But of course, none of us knew this the Ukrainians would hang on this long, and President Zelensky would inspire his nation and his people to defend themselves. So I think I reached out to people like Ben Cardin and Gene Shaheen, Gene is on the Armed Services Committee. Ben's on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee because, of course, nothing happens around here without bipartisan support. They kind of liked the idea, and then we went to work. And thanks to Roger Wicker, who was also part of that great group to start with, we just went from there. We passed it, of course, in the House, and then the Senate. House, and got it to the president. That's the way you make a law.
It is. It's remarkable that that happened since you came up with the idea in January, because I actually, other than continuing resolutions and stuff that has to pass because of, you know, default and things like that, debt ceiling, I've never heard of an actual piece of legislation requiring a supermajority moving from January to May. That is significant. Do you recall one, Senator Cornyn?
Well, we're working on another one right now. It has to do with providing the Supreme Court law enforcement with the authority to provide protective details for the justices and their children and their families. It just passed the Senate unanimously last night, and we're hoping to get it through the House in the next couple of days. So, you know, sometimes people have great ideas, but it's like they want to change Western civilization. and unfortunately, that takes a long time. And I think I've found that some of these rifle shots that make good progress in important areas are easier to do. And that's how we got it done.
Workhorse, not show horse. Now, Senator Cornyn, a different kind of rifle shot worries me. You served on the Texas Supreme Court. You also know that a nut tried to kill half the Republicans in Congress at a softball field, baseball field, not 3 miles from my home. And I worry. I am legitimately worried about justices and nuts. What in the world are your colleagues across the aisle saying about this?
Not very much. I mean, they seem to be encouraging the protest. And of course, they think this is a great distraction leading up to the midterm elections. They don't want to talk about inflation. They don't want to talk about crime. They don't want to talk about the border. So they want to talk about abortion. And even though this individual, whoever he or she was, for the first time in the history of the country, leaked a draft opinion in a very important case and created this furor. But of course, our Democratic colleagues are just stoking this because they think it will energize their base vote in the midterms. I think they're overreaching, as they usually do,
yep,
and it will backfire. But that's my view.
You know, I think if Chuck Schumer introduces that bill today, unlimited abortion on demand, federalizing it, it will hurt every Democrat who votes for it, because nobody wants that except the extreme. And it's not consistent with our federal approach, and super majorities in America support reasonable restrictions on abortions. Is that what your study of the issue? I actually looked at the numbers from private polling. Super majorities support reasonable restrictions on abortion.
That's exactly right. And, you know, if Senator Schumer wants the Senate to be on record on some of these issues, I'd like to have a vote on sex selection abortions, on late-term abortions like partial birth abortions, the infanticide, you know, people resuscitating a baby after a failed abortion. I'd like to get senators on the record on that, because I think what they're proposing in this bill is radical, and they need to be exposed for what they're trying to do.
It's a radical bill to play to their radical base, who are now taking to the streets in front of justices' houses. I played the entire speech of Leader McConnell from the floor yesterday, and I wasn't sure, but now I am. There is a federal law that prohibits this. I know there's a Virginia law as well that prohibits it. Do you want to see the demonstrators outside of justices' houses arrested?
Well, if they're violating the law, I sure do. I think, obviously, you know, there's always this fine line between peaceful protests, but we saw a lot of unpeaceful protests that were called by the mainstream media peaceful. But justices should not be threatened with violence on their children, and certainly the protesters should not be trespassing on their property. But I agree with you. There are some fragile minds out there who could be incited to violence by some of this irresponsible pandering to the radical base of the Democratic Party. And I think that's the reason why we need to make sure the justices and their families at least have the same sort of protective details that are available to members of Congress under similar circumstances.
And I remind everyone, I was tweeting out against January 6th rioters even as they began to riot. Senator Cornyn was on that same page. There is a line that when you cross it, you ought to be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. The Virginia and the federal law in this case is clear, just as the January 6th convicted are clear and should have been prosecuted. So there just isn't any disagreement here. First Amendment protects a lot. It doesn't protect violence or assault, which is the imminent threat. And there's a federal statute that protects justices and a Virginia statute that prohibits residential picketing. And I want them enforced. Senator, can we turn to a bigger issue now, which is the inflationary spiral that we are in? Mm-hmm. President Biden yesterday announced that billions of dollars, I think $14 billion of the infrastructure bill, is going to subsidize internet access via checks to people under twice the poverty level. Now, that might be a good idea or a bad idea, but I had no idea that was in the infrastructure bill. Did you?
Well, there was a big expensive bill, and the reason I didn't vote for it is because it was not responsibly paid for, which is what we were told it would be. But access to broadband is important. But the problem is, you know, I've looked at this, Hugh, back in the 30s. Remember the rural electrification program during the New Deal, and of course that's how Lyndon Johnson made his chops as a young congressman in Texas in the 1930s. But it's the broadband issue is a lot more complicated. It's not just a question of subsidizing people who have a hard time affording it. It's actually providing the incentives for the internet companies to actually build out to some rural locations. Now, Elon Musk, I think, has a pretty exquisite answer to that, which is these small satellites and with his Starlink system, and maybe there'll be some more innovation there. But just sending people more free money is inflationary, and I think we need to be very careful about it, and the president seems to be clueless.
You brought up Elon Musk. I discussed in the first segment of this hour Elon Musk and the Russian threat against him with former National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien, and first they made sure he didn't represent Elon Musk. And he says there's a duty of federal law enforcement to warn anyone against whom a credible threat of violence from a foreign government exists and to protect if necessary. And I'm sure Elon Musk has great security. But he's a patriot. He ought to get the Medal of Freedom for what he did in Ukraine, which is keep him online when the Russians were trying to to black ops them out of existence. What do you think of what Musk did for Ukraine?
I think it was inspired, and the guy is just continues to surprise and amaze me. I know he's more of a libertarian and not a conservative like you and me in that sense, but I think stepping up to help the people of Ukraine stay in touch with the rest of the world and expose these atrocities handed down by Russians in Ukraine was inspired, and I'm happy that he did it. But obviously, that's only part of the story. I wish we were doing a better job of getting the message out to the Russian people in Russia, because unfortunately, Putin's propaganda machine is working overtime, and they are unfortunately looks like supporting this invasion.
Now, I want to close by going back to the Supreme Court justices who have been threatened, Senator Cornyn. You served on the Texas Supreme Court, and unfortunately, we know of district court judges and state court judges who've been murdered by defendants in their court and people seeking revenge. We know of threats against everybody in public life, but I've never seen anything like this. Did you ever have the entire court threatened when you were on the Texas Supreme Court?
Not so much, maybe just on rare occasion, but no real credible threats that I can think of. But the problem, you know, most of the time judges are pretty anonymous. It's not like elected officials who have to campaign for office. And so, but unfortunately, you know, when Chuck Schumer goes over the steps of the Supreme Court and calls out Justices Gorsuch and Kavanaugh by name and says, you won't know what's hit you. And that sort of rhetoric, obviously that's something very different, because then these become very visible, and some twisted person with a grievance embraces that and then commits acts of violence like the one you mentioned against the congressional baseball team close to your house just a few years ago when Steve Scalise was nearly killed.
Yeah, Senator, every time I think Chuck Schumer has hit the floor, he finds a way to fall off of it. Thank you for joining me. Congratulations on the Lend-Lease Act becoming law. I know who started it. It was you, and I appreciate your joining me this morning, Senator.
Hugh, take care.
Take care.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.